Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, which brews beers that are highly rated by beer critics and beer lovers alike. More at gooseisland.com. We don't need to be the only beer you drink. We just want to be the best beer you drink.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and Greg, as you know, as everyone knows, the Olympics are in full swing. I've heard people talking about two things, wondering about two things with all the Olympic athletes. Number one, what are those weird marks on people? You know, cupping, apparently, right? Suction cups. Number two, everybody seems to be listening to music on their iPhone right up to the moment when the event starts, whether they're jumping in the pool or taking off on the track, right? What are these athletes listening to? How about Michael Phelps?
Oh, my God. That meme, that gif of him in the hoodie and the earbuds and that face. It's right up there with Crying Jordan in terms of those kind of memes that you are going to see forever associated with a moment of readiness. Okay, I'm ready to, you know, jump in that pool and I'm going to win this race. And not only that, I'm going to vanquish my opponents.
So what is this all-time gold medal winning Olympic swimmer, what is he listening to?
Well, according to the New York Times, he prefers to listen to Eminem, Young Jeezy, little Eric Church, quite a variety there. It's quite a moment for Eminem because President Obama also referenced Eminem's Lose Yourself as pump-up music to get ready for a big speech. Phelps is using Eminem to get pumped up for a big race. And it's working, apparently, because he's winning a ton of medals.
I guess so. I saw another article that quizzed some of the Olympic athletes. Alyssa Montano of track and field, she's listening to Drake's Headlines. Allison Felix, also a track and field athlete, listening to Beyonce's Diva. That makes sense. Lexi Thompson, I think, had the best choice. She's a golfer. She's listening to The Weeknd. This, of course, prompted us to start thinking, could we give a better recommendation for music for athletes to listen to right before the big event?
Well, it's such a personal thing, right, Jim? So it's more about what would motivate us. Let's say we're in an Olympic event. That would never happen. Neither one of us are great athletes.
Lord, no. I pass out just watching it on TV.
It did prompt me to question myself, like, what would get me motivated to do well in an athletic event? And immediately coming to mind was this band Parts and Labor. We actually had them on Sound Opinions years ago. They wrote what they called basement arena rock.
Yeah, I remember.
And it was kind of a mixture of lo-fi and the anthemic. I mean, the one thing that I loved about it is when they would get to the course, it sounded like you were being hurled over the side of a mountain. And I liked that sort of sense of triumph about it. And at the same time, there was this kind of less than perfect approach to the music. A lot of the music that these Olympic athletes are listening to is so perfect. It's so well produced.
Well, it's because they want a gold.
There's no imperfection.
You've got a music for the bronze medal winners?
No, but what I'm thinking is sometimes the drive to be perfect can work against you. And for me, it would be about just giving your best and not worrying about being perfect. So I think I hear the imperfections in Parts and Labor's music as much as the triumph, specifically their third album, Stay Afraid, the song A Great Divide.
All right, see, I figured there were two ways to go with this, and I knew you would take the pump-me-up approach. Not that I know anything about athletics. I don't. I figured, you know, I would actually not want to get pumped up. I would want to be centered. I would want to be zen. I want to, like, you know, really harness my concentration. I am shocked. This is an easy pick for me, okay? I am shocked that Brian Eno, in his
Ding.
Ambient music phase, has never done music for Olympics. You know what I mean? Did music for airports, music for films, discreet music. I would listen to Brian Eno, my favorite Brian Eno ambient music, Thursday Afternoon, the 1985 album. It's one 60-minute piece. It was meant to accompany a video, but I think it's the perfect concentration music. If you're studying for an important exam, if you just need to relax and calm down, I would want to, you know, it, get in the zone? Is that an athletic term?
Yeah, close
I've
enough.
Heard, I've heard, like, in flipping past ESPN, I'd want to get in the zone. I'd want to concentrate. Should throw it out to our listeners. What song would you use to get ready, if not for an Olympic event, then just a regular old workout? Give us a call at our hotline, 888-859-1800.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and that's the song Pedestrian at Best by our guest this week, singer-songwriter and guitarist Courtney Barnett. She's from Melbourne, Australia, and she was nominated for Best New Artist at the 2016 Grammys. That album from 2015, Sometimes I Sit and Think and Sometimes I Just Sit. What a debut that was.
Yeah, it was on our top 10, both of us.
Oh, it was incredible. And what was incredible about it, okay? She writes about everyday moments in her songs. It's not about these big political statements or big personal statements even. Imagery is so powerful and so relatable, and at the same time, there's a wit, a subversiveness to it, and then the guitar playing. Rhythm lead style. She's filling up a lot of space with that instrument in the way she plays it. The combination of the singing and the guitar playing make her one of the best new artists of the last few years, Jim. I think I can't wait to see what she's going to do next.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Greg. And the thing is that on stage in a big festival setting, a theater, wherever she's performing, she's absolutely explosive, right? But we had her in a very different mode. It was just her and her guitar. No backing band. We recorded live in front of a small audience at the intimate Goose Island Tap Room. So we talked about her musical style, we talked about her influences, we talked about her songwriting process, and she performed this solo set, which is going to be very different from the way you've heard her before. First, we went back to the beginning, to Melbourne, Australia, and I asked Courtney what her earliest memories of music were.
I started playing guitar when I was about 10, and I got a brother who's 4 years older than me. You know, I looked up to him a lot, and he had, like, mixtapes from his friends with like Hendrix and Nirvana and Ace of Base. And
of course.
Yeah.
What made you fall in love with that music?
I just remember being obsessed with it. And we got our first family computer, and I would type out the lyrics as I was listening to the record. And Mum came in one day, I was listening to In Utero, and I'd written, like, I want to eat your cancer. And Mum was like, what are you listening to? I wish I could eat your cancer. But I don't think I really knew what the words were or what they meant.
I'm not sure Kurt always did either. Both Greg and I interviewed him. There was a sort of Burroughs stream of consciousness thing that he loved to pursue. He talked about cut and paste and just stray ideas. You, on the other hand, as a writer, have this wonderful novelistic eye for detail. You love little vignettes.
Yeah, I've kind of tried lots of different writing exercises and stuff to get ideas, and I went to art school straight out of school, and I remember learning about, like, the kind of surrealists and the stream of consciousness writing and all that stuff. I found that really interesting, so, you know, I gave that a go, and I still kind of do that every day if I can, which is a lie, every now and then.
As often as you can. I'll lay you
I would always talk to these Australian musicians, you know, everybody from Nick Cave to AC/DC, and they would always say how tough the bar scene was in Australia. Like, if you weren't pleasing the crowd, they would really let you have it. They would let you know. It was a hard-drinking crowd. They wanted to hear some good-time music, and if you weren't delivering, you had to put on a show. Did you experience any of that?
No, I mean, when we were doing that, it was pretty much just our friends, you know, convincing them to come. And yeah, I've heard those kind of stories, and people would just, like, throw beers. When I first started singing my songs, it was at open mic night, so it was very kind of acoustic. And then I started working in bars when I moved to Melbourne. Like, I'd play in a band with another guy who worked behind the bar, and we would kind of pour the beers, do the sound, and then sometimes we'd play the gig as well and be like, serve yourself, and then run and fix the sound. And
you're basically a guitar player. That's how you cut your teeth, right?
Yeah.
As a live performer, you're basically a guitarist in a band.
I was just too nervous to sing in front of anyone, I think. I didn't really sing. Like, when I started playing guitar, it was too hard to sing and play at the same time. It took me so long to figure out how that works.
How'd you overcome that hurdle about singing? How did you get past the idea of singing in front of an audience?
Well, I don't think I am totally over it, but I'm definitely more over it than I was then. I think I just started writing songs that I felt comfortable singing, and in a way that I, you know, I felt in my safe zone.
And then you form your own label and put that stuff out. I mean, that was a pretty bold move, too. You never tried to shop it or anybody interested in putting this out for me.
Yeah, no one was really interested, so I didn't really know how to do that. I didn't know how to shop stuff around, so I just figured I'd make a store and people could buy it if they wanted to.
Become a record mogul.
Yeah, that's me.
Courtney, you're sitting there. What are you going to play?
This on the new album is called Elevator Operator. Oliver Paul, 20 years old. Thick head of hair, worries he's going bald. Wakes up at a 9:15. Ferravades his way down the 96 tram line. Breakfast on the run again, he's well aware. He's dropping soil in seed, Vegemite crumbs everywhere. Feeling sick at the sight of his computer, he dodges his way through the Swanston commuters. Rips off his tie, hands it to a homeless man sleeping in the corner of a metro bus, and he screams, I'm not gonna work today. Gonna count the minutes that the trains run late. Sit on the grass, building pyramids out of coke cans. Headphone wielding to the Nicholas building, he trips on a pothole that's not been filled in. He waits for an elevator, 129. A lady walks in and waits by his side. Her heels are high and her bag is snakeskin. Hair pulled so tight you can see a skeleton. Vicar's perfume on her breath. A tortoiseshell necklace between her breasts. She looks him up and down with a Botox frown. He's well used to that look by now. The elevator dings and they awkwardly step in. Their fingers touch on the rooftop button. Don't jump, little boy, don't jump off that roof. You got your whole life ahead of you, you're still in your youth. I'd give anything to have skin like you. He said, I think you're projecting the way that you're feeling. I'm not suicidal, just idling insignificantly. I come up here for perception and clarity. I like to imagine I'm playing Sim City. All the people look like ants from up here. Jump, little boy, don't jump off that roof. You got your whole life ahead of you. Thank you.
Elevator operator by Courtney Barnett. Not to get old rock critic-y on you. Okay, but I love the different ways we can read that song. I mean, in some ways, it seems like a mini novella, you know, about, you know, why is the boy taking the elevator to the roof? Is he going to jump off, right? But then, I had another perspective when I've read you say in interviews, it's not really about that. It's about judgment and how people think they know your story when they look at you. But do they?
Yeah.
What was the genesis of that tune in particular?
My friend came over for dinner, Oliver. He's the character in the story. He just kind of said that he'd had a weird experience that day. He went to the Nicholas Building, which is in the middle of Swanson Street, and he wanted to go to the roof because he heard it was a nice view. This lady got in the elevator with him and wouldn't let him go to the roof because she thought he was going to kill himself. And then I kind of created, you know, a story around it because obviously I wasn't there and didn't know the rest of it. But yeah, I kind of just used a little bit of poetic license.
The fact that you're writing about these everyday things and turning them into songs, which is a very appealing part of what you do. And it seems like you do write a lot of stuff down. So are you writing all the time, like taking notes on the road? Do you have like a journal that you keep with you all the time? Is that how it starts?
I do. I carry a journal and I just write stuff forever. But it takes me a long time to kind of work something out. So even if it's floating around in my head, I'll kind of eventually come back and find it. And if I just write a three-word scribble in my book, then that kind of helps bring it back at some point.
After the break, we'll be back with Courtney Barnett at the Goose Island Tap Room, and she'll talk about how her ideas become songs. Later, we'll review the new album from alt-country singer-songwriter Lydia Loveless. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.